So over the last few weeks, we have looked at statements of Jesus where he tells us why he came to this world, why he was born, why he lived the way he did, and why he died the death he died. So a few weeks ago, we first looked at Jesus saying that he came not for the well, but for the sick. He came not to call the righteous, but sinners to himself. And last week, Pastor Bart led us in Jesus' statement where he said, he came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus said, I came to die for sinners. I came to be a ransom, to die in sinners' place. And then this morning, we're going to focus on John chapter 9, the whole chapter. But at the end of John 9, Jesus says that he came that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may become blind. So it might take some time to understand. What is he saying? Those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. It's page 522 of the Bibles in the baskets under the chairs if you'd like to turn there. But the way I would like to look at this is first, I want altogether to look at the story in John 9. So these statements happen at the end of a story. They're in the context of a beautiful story about Jesus. So we'll look at the story, then we'll just very clearly, hopefully, look through these statements that Jesus gives at the end of this story in John 9. So first, the story. And I'd like to start a little bit before John 9, back in John 7, a lead-in to the story of John 9. Jesus and his teaching are creating very different responses among the people around him. Some see Jesus, some hear Jesus, and they say, well, we think he's a good man. Others say, maybe he's the Christ, maybe he's the sent one of God. And then others say, no way, he's leading people astray. So this is happening around Jesus as he teaches, but no one is willing to really talk out in the open about Jesus because the religious guys, the religious leaders are dead set against Jesus. So off in the corners with close friends whispering together, they're talking about who is this Jesus? So Jesus in John 7 steps into the center of everything. He goes to Jerusalem. He goes to the temple. He starts teaching out in the open. And as he's there, we see these different responses to his teaching. But everyone, the people who like him and the people who don't like him, are all amazed at his teaching. Even the religious leaders are saying, he hasn't studied anywhere. How is he such an amazing teacher? But then we see these two groups start to form and solidify. People are seeing Jesus very differently. Two extremes, two kind of logical, the only logical responses to Jesus as people see him and hear him and watch him, two responses. First, some are thinking he is the Christ. He is the sent one of God. He is God in the flesh. He is the Messiah. And others, no way, this guy deserves to be arrested. This guy is an imposter. He's a crazy man. He's a lunatic. He's leading people astray. And even during Jesus' life, as his mission becomes more clear, these groups form and solidify. The only two responses to Jesus when people really see him and really hear what he has to say. Like C.S. Lewis said many years after these episodes in John 9, either Jesus is a liar, he's a lunatic, or he's Lord. There are no other options. These are the only legitimate options. Or as Augustine said 1,000 years before C.S. Lewis, the world can be divided between mockers and praisers of Jesus. Every single human being falls into one of these two categories, a mocker of Jesus or a praiser of Jesus. The only two responses. By the end of John 8, the religious leaders are so furious that they're actually picking up stones. Jesus is teaching, the religious leaders are hearing him, they're picking up stones to throw them at Jesus to kill him, to stone him. And the text says at the end of John 8 that somehow Jesus hid himself and left the temple. That's how John 8 ends. And it brings us to the story in John 9. It's such a cool story that we get to look at this morning. So we don't know how long after the escaped stoning, but next part of the story is Jesus in this conversation with his disciples. Verse 1 of chapter 9, as Jesus passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. So it seems that at least a little time has passed since the attempted stoning, we would guess, right? To have this kind of casual conversation. I don't see them running out of the temple away from the religious leaders, you know, throwing stones at them. So maybe a few hours, we're not sure, maybe a few days. But after John 8, here we come to John 9. They're walking down the road, Jesus and his disciples, and they see this blind man. Jesus sees a man blind from birth. And Jesus sees the man truly. And as we read the rest of John 9, we see that Jesus sees him, knows him, and he enters into his situation. He knows the man's suffering. He understands his experience. He knows everything about this man. And with amazing compassion and power, he will come to this individual man and he will heal him. The disciples see the same man, but they see just a theological problem. They don't really see the man. They definitely don't enter into the man's situation. They take on the thought patterns of the culture around them. This man clearly is guilty. He's suffering in this way because he's guilty of some kind of sin, or maybe not him, his parents are pretty sinful people, so this suffering has come. They don't enter the man's situation. They just want to philosophize about his condition. But here, right at the beginning of John 9, the different ways of seeing the blind man show us something beautiful about Jesus and his care for people. He sees him. He knows him. He comes with compassion and power. So this, even now, should start to affect the way we see Jesus. But the story continues. As they see this blind man, the disciples ask Jesus, "Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he is born blind?" And Jesus answers, "No, you don't understand. It doesn't work that way. It was not that this man sinned or his parents. This man was born blind for a very different reason. This man was born blind for this moment, so that right now the amazing works of God might be shown in him. That's why he was born blind." And Jesus says, "I am the light of the world. This man was born blind so that right now this amazing work of God would happen." And Jesus is saying, "And people would see me for who I am." Because it really, really matters that people see and know Jesus as he is. That's why this whole story is set up. This actual event is set up in this way. He was born blind and lived a life of blindness so that people would see Jesus. So, very obvious here, it's important that we see Jesus as we read the story, as we see the story. So Jesus says that, and then as we're following the story, we should be waiting for a response. What is this amazing, what is he going to do? This man was born blind for this very reason, so what will he do? So Jesus says those words, and then we can picture him. He turns to the side, and he spits on the ground. I would assume a rather large spit, right? He spits on the ground. We can assume he leans down, right? He'd have to lean down. And he starts playing with his spit, making mud in the ground. And the disciples, you can picture them, just watch. What is this amazing work of God? He picks up the mud. He picks up the mud and puts it on the blind man's eyes. And he says, "Go. Wash your eyes and come back." And then one of the biggest understatements of the Bible, verse 7, the second part of John 9, verse 7, the man went, washed, and came back seeing. It's like my mom went to the store, bought tomatoes, and came home. Right? So that kind of seems so matter of fact. But the blind man who has been blind forever, his whole life, is now no longer blind. This is the amazing work of God. And the way the Gospel of John is set up, this is just one sign of many pointing. It's a sign pointing to who Jesus is. Do you see who he is? He can even heal the blind. The prophet Isaiah said that in the future one would come, the Messiah, the sent one of God, and when he came, he would give sight to blind people. And now Jesus is stepping on the stage, and what does he do? He gives sight. to this blind man, and we know from other stories in the gospel, he gives sight to other blind men. So this is the story. How do people respond? The rest of John 9 is really a response to this sign of who Jesus is. And there are a few different ways people respond. And as we come to the story, what is John 9 doing for us? Why is it there for us? I believe we're to ask ourselves, how am I seeing Jesus? What is my response to this same Jesus? Do I see him accurately? Do I understand him? Again, only two legitimate responses. Either a mocker, a denier, an ignorer of Jesus, or this is the Son of God. I will give my life to him. There's no like middle group. He's a good man. There's no middle group. There's only two legitimate responses. And we see this here. First, how do people respond? First, the people around, the neighbors. They're still working through. They're processing what's going on. Some believe, some don't. Some are still trying to figure this out, but the groups are forming. Some believe this guy's testimony that Jesus healed his blindness. Others think this is so extraordinary. How could this ever happen? But for fear of the religious leaders, for fear of this group of people leading the community, many still do not believe in Jesus. So how do these people respond? Hesitating with fear, many still do not believe. Second group, the Pharisees, the religious leaders. One scholar called these the serious. I think that's a good description. The serious ones, like self-important. How do they respond to Jesus? The sign is given and they are furious. They are furious. How could he do this on what they say, the Sabbath? How could he do this on the Sabbath? How could he do this work? He can't be from God if he does this on this special religious day where we're not supposed to be working. How could he get down and make mud cakes? How could he abuse the Sabbath like that and heal this man? He can't be from God. So they're furious at this sign. Now I think we can get behind that. It's so ridiculous that they would respond in that way to this amazing sign that there are other things underlying motives, right? They probably don't want to give up their power. They don't want to give up their influence. They don't want to give up their selves to this Jesus. So they twist their thinking. They twist their communication and just remain furious at him, deciding to be blind at the sign. They don't want to see it. And they completely misrepresent God throughout this story. So that's the second. Third, the man's response. The Pharisees, he's brought before the religious leaders. And the Pharisees ask the man, what do you say about him? What do you think about this guy who's healed you, who's given you sight? And here's my paraphrase. Do you know, I think this is what he says, do you know what my life was like before? Do you know, do you not see what he did? He has to be a prophet. There's no getting around the fact that he is from God. Don't you see what he did? How could you not see this? This is so obvious. He sees Jesus, truly. The parents are brought in. They want other witnesses, and the parents respond basically like the crowd, maybe a little more complicit in this in the sense that they don't even recognize their own boy. They just pass it off to him. So in fear, they respond like many around them. And then back in verse 24, if you look at verse 24, we see the man's response continue. And I'll read this. Verse 24, for the second time, they called the man who had been born blind and said to him, give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. Verse 25, the man answered, whether he's a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. They said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I have told you already. I told you about Jesus coming. He bent down. He made mud. He put it on my... I told you. You refuse to listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? And their response, they reviled him. you are his disciple? Like, how could you be his disciple? How could you follow him? We are disciples of Moses because we see the world, we see these things accurately. We can see it. We're disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we don't know where he comes from. The man answered, "Why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God, he does and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing." They answered him, "You were born in utter sin. Would you teach us? We're the ones who see things accurately. You would teach us? How dare you?" Right? And they cast him out. And this isn't just like, get out of the room. They cast him out of the community. They kicked him out of everything that mattered to anyone who lived in that time and place. They cast him out of the community. Think about his life. Think about this one day in his life. He's blind at the beginning of the day. And because he's blind, in a sense, he's on the outskirts of the community. Everybody looks down on him. He's the sinner. Because he's blind. Everyone thinks it's his fault. He's begging for food each day, and everybody's kind of looking down. Even if they help him, they look down on him as they help him. Jesus comes, gives him sight. Now he can be a part of things. Now he can enter into community. Now he can have a life. Lasts maybe a few hours, and then because of the blindness of the religious leaders, he's kicked out of his community. But because of the love of Jesus, he's brought into true community, true relationship, true friendship with the God who made him. Verse 35, the story is coming to a close, and we see these statements of Jesus as Jesus finds this man. After he's been cast out by the religious leaders, Jesus comes and finds him, and he says to him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" The man responded, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe him? I know what you can do. Who is he? Whatever you say, I'll believe. I've experienced what I was blind, but now I see because of you, so tell me." And Jesus said, "You have seen him." Now think about the whole story. He hasn't seen much in his life. He's seen Jesus. "You have seen him. It is he who is speaking to you." "Lord, I believe. Lord, I believe." And Jesus says, verse 39, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." Pharisees overhear this, these religious leaders, the serious. "Are you calling us blind?" Jesus, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, we see, your guilt remains." So that's the story. It's a beautiful story, isn't it? It's a great story. I want us to consider just these closing statements of Jesus and then ask the question that I believe we're supposed to ask of ourselves as we come to this text. Each of us is to ask, how am I seeing Jesus? Really, how am I seeing Jesus? That's, I believe, what we need to do. So first, Jesus says here at the end, "For judgment I came into this world." Doesn't sound like a cheery Christmas message, right? "For judgment I came into this world." But I think we have to understand is that at first glance, this statement seems directly contrary to some of the other statements we've even looked at last week, not to be served. He said, "I came not to be served, but to serve and to give myself as a ransom for many." How does "for judgment I came in the world" fit with "I came to die and give myself as a ransom"? Well, judgment here does not mean, Jesus is not saying, "I came to bring punishment on the world." That's not what he's saying here. Jesus is saying, "I've come to clarify people's response to God and to distinguish people. I have come to basically put people in these two categories, either a mocker or a praiser of God. I've come to make this happen. And through Jesus' birth and life and death, these groups continue to form. And through the mission of the church, throughout this time in which we live, these groups will form. And through all of eternity, these groups will exist. Those who mock and deny God and will face the judgment of God, because as we'll see later, the guilt of their guilt remains on them, one group, and one group who has seen Jesus, trusted in Jesus, and their guilt is removed, and they will be forever with him. For judgment I came into this world to put these two groups, to clarify these two groups. Each of these groups have a different focus. They genuinely have a different love, and they have a very different end. And we'll see this as we continue. Sometimes those who say they are a part of one group, those who present themselves as followers of Christ, as the church, as Jesus' people, do not look anything like Jesus' followers. And I think we really clearly see this here in this passage as Jesus is interacting with these religious people, the serious ones, the committed ones. Jesus is very carefully showing us what his followers really look like, what marks them, what it is about them that distinguishes them from others. We'll see this as we continue. But Jesus says, I came for judgment, I came into this world to clarify these two groups. Secondly, that those, he continues, that those who do not see may see. So who are those who do not see? Who is Jesus talking about? First, rather obvious, people like this blind man on the side of the road begging. The Messiah came to give sight to this blind man. He didn't see. Now he sees. He couldn't get around. He was stumbling through life. He couldn't take care of himself, so dependent on others. He couldn't see to work for himself. He probably couldn't get married because of that. Couldn't have a family. His whole world looked down on him because of his blindness, because of his apparent sin that led to his blindness. So here's a man, guilt, shame, weakness mark him. The Messiah came. Jesus came into the situation to give sight, to give life, to give peace. That's what the Messiah does. There's a great scene in the movie Hacksaw Ridge about Desmond Doss. He's a medic in the war in Japan, whichever war that is, right? But he just an amazing true story, this movie, Hacksaw Ridge, where he goes and rescues hundreds of people from battle, right? Beautiful story. But there's a scene in that movie where one of the men who is left on the battlefield, one of his men, is wounded in the head, and the blood from his wound cakes his eyes, so the man clearly thinks he's blind for the rest of his life. He's just temporarily blind, but he thinks he's blind, and he can hear in the distance the Japanese walking through the wounded soldiers and killing them, little by little. And you see just the devastation on his face. Will he make it out? He's thinking, what will my life be? Even if I do make it out, will I ever be able to see again? And then Desmond Doss, the hero of the story, comes and he washes his wounds and he washes his eyes, and the man's face lights up. He's not blind forever. He can see. See the relief on his face. And you think of the relief that comes to this real man in his real situation, his real blindness that affected him so deeply. Jesus comes into the situation and he gives him sight. He delivers him so that he could say, I once was blind, but now I see. So who are these who do not see? It's those who really have physical blindness. And Jesus enters the story of the blind man and heals him. And for every person who trusts in Jesus, who has physical blindness, one day will be given sight. There is hope for physical sight for every follower of Christ on into eternity. So that's part of it. But Jesus is pointing to a lot more than just physical blindness here. There's a spiritual blindness as well, that Jesus comes to lead people out of. Who do not see spiritually will see because of Jesus' work. Jesus uses this picture, kind of like a living illustration of blindness, to describe what he does for each and every person who comes to see him. Jesus leads from blindness to sight. So Jesus heals real physical blindness in the story. We'll do it again. But Jesus is also pointing to spiritual seeing, to spiritual life, a true peace and joy and acceptance before God. So what is this spiritual blindness? How do we understand this? Spiritual blindness is a recognition of spiritual need in every single person. It's a recognition that you don't have all the answers, that God is God and you are not. This blindness is a recognition of the only path to true spiritual sight. Recognizing that you don't have it all together is this blindness. Recognizing that you are dependent is this blindness. Recognizing your sin, failure, and need is this blindness. As we see the way Jesus describes it, I think you have to think of it this way. True blindness here is not just living in sin and disregarding Jesus. The way Jesus speaks of it, this blindness is a gift because we start to see who we really are. And admitting your blindness will lead you to true sight. That's the way Jesus refers to it. So, of course, I would say, every person who rejects Jesus, this obvious sign is given, you're living in blindness. But Jesus holds up blindness in the sense that when we see our many sins, this is God's grace to show us that we're not seeing things accurately. We're blind in a sense, and from this blindness, we're given new eyes to see ourselves and to see Jesus for who he is. Let me quote a London preacher by the name of Charles Spurgeon. He said this, "The way of seeing is the way of the blind. The way of seeing is the way of the blind. It's not our littleness that hinders Christ, but our bigness. It's not our weakness that hinders Christ, it is our strength. It's not our darkness that hinders Christ, it is our supposed light that holds back his hand. The way of seeing is the way of the blind." The way of true sight is essentially this, a willingness to admit the obvious fact that we're blind. What Jesus is addressing here. Secondly, that those who see may become blind. Right? So I came that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind. So you look at Jesus' world in his days on earth, this first century community that he's a part of, where he's operating. Everyone thought these religious leaders were the ones who see. Right? They got it. They were the ones connected to God. They were the seeing ones. They knew what they were talking about. They were the authorities. They were the spiritual people. They were the religious ones. But Jesus, contrary to his whole culture and community, redefines, he overturns the tables. He has a very different message. Those who say they see will become blind. Those who are convinced of their own knowledge, of their own seeing, their own strength, will be brought low, will be blind. These religious leaders were proud, self-confident, unloving to others, abusing their power, looking down on others. They claimed to see, they claimed to know God, but they were blind as bats, Jesus is saying. How often is this true of people's experience with the church and Christians today? People who claim to see, people who claim to know Jesus, people who claim to be followers of Jesus, but are not marked by what Jesus says his followers will be marked by, looking down on others, abusing in power over others, proud and unloving. Sadly, I think for many of us, in our own experience with people who claim to see, we've experienced what we see in these religious leaders and not what Jesus leads people to. It's important to see the signs that point to Jesus. It's a very different way. It leads to a very different place. Jesus says those who see are those who have come to realize that they don't see by themselves. And it leads to an absolute dependence so that we will not look down on others. I've come to this knowledge. I know this truth. It doesn't lead to this looking down. It leads to, can you believe this? This man made mud. He anointed my eyes. And now I see. I was blind, but now I see. He did it. There's nothing in me. If you have been hurt by the church, or if you've been hurt by Christians who claim this knowledge, claim this sight, and look nothing like it, look at this story of Jesus. Look at his point here, his emphasis here. Those who are blind see in Jesus, and it changes them forever. It doesn't lead to pride. It doesn't lead to this looking down on others as we so often see in the church. It leads to a sweet humility and a focus on Jesus. Blind, this guy made me see. The reformer Martin Luther, in a letter to his friend, said this. It's old. This is like 1500, so some archaic language, but it's beautiful. Writing to a friend, he says, "Therefore, my dear brother, learn Christ and him crucified. Be focused on Jesus and the cross." Focus on this. "And learn to pray to him, despairing of yourself," not looking for any like foundation in yourself. "Learn to pray, despairing of yourself, saying this, 'Thou, Lord Jesus, you art my righteousness. I am,'" what do I bring to the table? "I am thy sin. Thou hast taken on thyself what thou wast not. You were perfectly righteous, Jesus. You took my sin upon you. And you have given to me what I was not. I was completely sinful. You've given me your righteousness." Then Luther says in the letter, "Beware, beware of ever aspiring to such purity that you do not want to seem to yourself or to be a sinner. Beware of thinking of yourself so purely. You've made it this far. You've lived this way for so long. Beware of ever aspiring to such purity that you do not want to seem to yourself or to be a sinner. For Christ only dwells with sinners. Christ only dwells in sinners. Never lose sight of this. Never lose sight of your need, of your dependence, of resting upon him. Jesus came that those who do not see, utterly blind, will see." How do they see? They recognize their blindness by God's grace, and they see Jesus. "And Jesus came that those who see, who claim to know God, to see how it works in this world," they're the religious people, he came to lead them to blindness. Verse 40 at the end, the religious leaders overhear this. "How dare you call us blind," they say. This is the last statement that I think needs some explanation. But he says to the religious leaders, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, 'We see,' your guilt remains. If you walk the path of blindness to sight, your guilt would be taken care of," Jesus says. "It wouldn't rest on you. Your guilt would not rest on you if you walked this path, if you were led in this way. But because you say with all this confidence and bravado, 'We see,' your guilt remains. Your guilt rests on you. Because there's only one way of truly dealing with guilt, of removing guilt. And it's only by looking to Jesus and trusting in him. Through his perfect life, through his sacrificial death on the cross, he took our sin upon him. He took it to the place of punishment. The punishment that our guilt required was poured out. That punishment was poured out upon him. So guilt is removed because it was placed on Christ, and the wrath of God came down upon him at the cross. So Jesus is saying, this religious leader says, how dare you call us blind? And Jesus says, if you were blind, that would be a good thing. It would lead you to see your need. It would lead you to have your guilt removed. But now that you still say in all your confidence, it's about me, I can do it, this independent spirit, because you say we see, your guilt remains. Because the only way this guilt can be removed for your sin is by Jesus taking it off your shoulders. It's only through the cross that guilt is removed. This is why Jesus came. His birth is important, but it's important because it made possible his death, which is the center of history. The cross of Jesus is the center of history, and all of humanity really is divided by those who praise Jesus, look and trust, and guilt is removed, and those who say, no thanks, I don't quite see him like that. He may have been, whatever, I don't see him like that. Guilt remains because we don't let Jesus take it off our shoulders. The cross is the center of history. One of the most well-known hymns captures this well, Amazing Grace. John Newton, the slave trader, this wicked, wicked, wicked man, comes to Christ, and he writes this hymn, Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. He saw himself accurately. That saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. 'Twas blind, but now I see. Because Jesus came. He showed me my wretchedness. I was a wretch. And he led me to the place of forgiveness and righteousness through him. So, what do you see when you look to Jesus? Do you see Jesus for who he is? Which group are you in? There's no middle ground. Either you're looking to him in worship and praise and dependent upon him and his death every day, or this no thanks or indifference mocked him. So where do you find yourselves? This obvious sign is given to us. How do you respond? And secondly, whatever your experience is with church people, with church or Christians, you know, it's often said, you ask people outside of the church, what are people in the church? They're a bunch of hypocrites, right? That comes up often. Sadly, it's not always true, but sadly, it often is true. And even in my experience, right, on the inside, I'm the preacher today, right? On the inside, I've seen it, and sadly, I've lived it, right? A little hypocrisy, I'm a little bit better than others because I'm here. I'm the preacher boy, right? So I've seen it, and I've lived it, and thank God there's forgiveness for even that. But still, a lot of hurt comes when the church doesn't act like the church, or people claim to be followers of Christ. We see things, and the message given to the world is looking down on them. We are the righteous ones. Don't let that taint your picture of Jesus, because that picture Jesus gives is so, so different from the religious leaders in our text, and sadly from what many of us have experienced in the church. Following Christ leads to an absolute dependence on Jesus every day, where we see our sin. By God's grace, we see more and more and more of our sin, and we see our desperate plight. There's no way I can just do a few good things this week. There's no way I can just read my Bible and pray and be nice to people. It will never take care of this debt I have because of all my selfish sin. This is God's grace to show me myself truly, so that then I look to Jesus and the cross happened. My sin is taken care of. I'm set free. This is how I see. The cross of Christ leads me to true sight. And I come to the Bible and I read the word that centers on Jesus and his death, and it leads me to true sight, away from blindness to sight. And how do I see? It's through the community of Christ, where we come alongside each other and we point each other to Christ, to the cross. This is what we need. And we come alongside each other and you say, I was blind, but now I see. It's not about me. I was blind, but now I see. And as we continue as a church, what will mark us as people looking to the cross? We'll see things differently sometimes. And there are times where I see things and I'm quite convinced that the way Jim Mong sees things is the right way to see things. But what does all this do to the way I see things? It leads me to be marked by humility, knowing that the way I see things isn't always the right way to see things. It leads me to humility so that we can walk side by side even as we disagree and not look down on how dare you look at it that way, I see it this way. No, looking to Jesus and recognizing our utter blindness in this life, our utter need, will lead us to unity. Because in humility, we can step in each other's shoes and see things and work through things together. It's a community marked by this humility because we're marked by the cross of Jesus Christ. So yes, we will see things differently for a number of reasons. But we're able to walk in unity because we're just a bunch of blind people that Jesus came and has given us sight and our eyes are focused on him. One of the most ugly things in the world is a group of people who are self-righteous, proud, sometimes religious, looking down. That's one of the most ugly things in the world. But one of the most beautiful things, maybe I should say the most beautiful thing in the world, is the sight of Jesus, right? The beatific vision of Jesus, the one who gave himself for us and leads us to life. A life of perfect acceptance in him, a life of perfect peace in him, a life that leads to greater and greater love for others. Jesus came that those who do not see, recognize recognize this. Jesus came that those who do not see may see. And recognize this warning, and those who see, who are trusting in their own intuition, their own knowledge, those who see may become blind. But Jesus came to give himself for us and to lead us to this beautiful sight. So respond. And the only obvious way to this sign, respond in that obvious way, worship, praise, I give you my life. I give you everything because I was just a blind man, but now I see. Let's pray.